Hello, my friend.
Hey, Mr. Vardy, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I am better.
Better. Was everyone sick?
Yeah. Well, I was. I had a pretty bad flu for most last week, and still kind of.
It's going around.
Yeah, you know.
It's that time of year.
Here and there.
Yeah. Grace is home from school today. She just sore throat, you know, like kind of the beginnings of it. So we're like, you know what, with the holiday season, let's just keep you home.
Yeah, let's not risk it.
Not risk it, that kind of stuff. So.
She's not missing anything this time of year. They don't do anything in school.
No, they're pretty much at the tail end of what, I mean, once report cards come home.
that's over.
This is her first letter grade this year, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, grade four is where they go back to letter grades. How's she doing? She's doing well. She's got A's and B's. But B's, basically, it's really weird. They don't do anything below C+ anymore, I don't think.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no F's, there's no E's, there's no D's.
What?
Yeah, not in grade school.
Okay, that's just crazy.
I know.
What's the point?
Well, it's like the whole adage of we don't play to win, we just play to play. Like, you know, it's that whole, I think it breeds, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But let's we can talk about this when we should start recording in a second.
Surprised you haven't
already. I am recording. I am recording.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then let's just roll.
Let's just roll.
I have no real agenda. I figured we'd just get on and we'd find our way once we got going.
Yeah, I'm just it does surprise me because initially it was like grades 1 through 3. It's like numbered grades, you know, like ones or twos or threes. Now it's letter grades, but yeah, apparently the lowest they go is like C or C+ or something like that.
So what is that, you know? But here's the thing, right? If you restrict the the grading range, then does a B basically become a C, you know what I mean?
It's actually relative, right? When you think about it, because for us, I mean, a C is like an F.
Yeah,
like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I totally get. You know, when you have high expectations, it's
well. So I'm seeing a lot of B's on my daughter's credit card, it's kind of
pretty much that's what's going to all be pretty soon.
But I see them.
Welcome to our dystopian future.
Exactly, I see them, and I'm like. You know, because my frame of reference is, well, B is not an A, like, you know, like, so you can, but according to the report card, the B is like she is exceeding the expectations of the grade, and A is like an A+ now, you know, so it's hard to, and it's, you know, it's like the VCR for us, you know, the flashing VCR that was like to our parents. This is what this is like. I'm like, oh my God, I'm having problems relating to this because my education with it was an A was the best you could get. And an A+ was like amazing. Now the B seems to be like, if you get a B, you're awesome. And if you get an A, you're amazing. And I'm like, B was like always like that. Okay, you got B's. That's a good report card. C's are like, you need some average, you know. D, you're in trouble. E and F, you're done.
But for most of school, I would be overjoyed if I had a B. The only thing I got A's in was social studies and English. Everything else I struggled in greatly.
See, and I got in grade four, it was funny, my daughter and I were talking about this, and I said, you know, I got straight A's except for one C in C+ actually in grade four. She goes, what was that in? I'm like, gym. And my wife's like, how do you get a C+ in gym? I'm like, you have seen me, right? No, I'm not exactly the most coordinated of people. So it was like the easy thing for them to go, well, if we don't want to give them straight A's, well, here we go, gym. That's what we'll do.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. We got to take them down a notch.
Exactly. But yeah, it was just, it's fascinating when you start to see the scope of how things changed. And they're changing in my mind again. You get that whole back in my day, but that's kind of, I mean, I get it now. It's like, you know, I should,
I mean, you know, you've become like, you finally become your father.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you start saying these things, but it's true, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, so we have a similar issue with Beatrix. So, you know, we went to Beatrix's conferences a couple of weeks back, and, you know, Beatrix is a sweet and lovely child, but she sometimes lacks confidence, and that lack of confidence we found could lead to some behaviors in the classroom which were not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly, she essentially got caught copying off of someone else's paper in math.
Right.
Okay. And what's hilarious is that the way in which she was caught was the typical, well, you know, her answers were identical to the other kid sitting next to her.
Right.
And what really red flagged it was she crosses her sevens.
Mm-hmm.
Beatrix crosses her sevens. She always has. She picked it up from Bethany. I believe Bethany crosses her sevens, i.e. when she draws a seven, she puts a little line through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she makes ones in the traditional, you know.
With the flag at the top.
With the flag at the top, yeah. Basically, she makes serif ones, and so crossing her sevens is even more important. But she even copied. She was so good at copying this little girl that, like,
she forgot
the sevens and didn't cross them, right?
Which is really the only way, like, when you think about it, math is, it's not subjective, right? You know, like, it's either 2 + 2 = 4, right? The theory, you know,
right.
So, but with English is like, you get plagiarism is easily caught, but yeah, the whole, like,
You can change it up a little bit here.
But whatever. The Encyclopedia Brown thing happened. There was like, I knew she got, how did you know? Well, she didn't flag her. she didn't cross.
So last night we're checking up on her, and we go on to the parent portal. Parent portal is this, you know, online system with, you know, this designed so that parents can go online and look at their kids' marks at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's dependent upon the teachers actually putting the marks in there,
right,
for parents to look at, which is hit or miss in first grade, we've come to find out.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, even the marks didn't make sense because she's got like 11s and 2s and 5s, and it's like, okay, but what does that mean? What is on what scale, right?
Yeah.
And just looking at it, we figured out, okay, well, this must be on a different scale than this other thing, because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally we sent an email to the teacher, and we're like, you know, hey, you know, wanted to check in since conferences. You know, Beatrix, you know, seems a little bit more confident at home. We want to know how she's doing in the classroom and whether or not, you know, having moved her seat and are working with her and talking to her at home about her confidence and things, you know, if that would have, you know, if that's made a difference. Oh, and by the way, we went on Parent Portal to try to take a look and see how things are going, and we don't quite understand the grading system. Would you mind explaining it to us? And we got a note back from the teacher, and this is also a big part of our problem, is that her teacher is one of these people that can say something without actually saying anything. She's like the Donald Rumsfeld, the first grade teacher. Right? You know, there are things we know we know.
And then there's things we don't know that we know.
No. And so, yeah, we were, you know, she sits back this thing that's like, yeah, I've noticed her confidence in class is much greater. I haven't had any additional issues amongst the ones that we discussed, and having moved her seat, and she seems to be doing better. Thanks.
But wait a minute.
But wait, you missed the whole reason we were writing.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, we're going to have this back and forth. I know it's going to take like several emails just to get to the point of, we just want to know what the scale is.
See, and the thing is that I'm seeing like these kind of disconnects happening more and more, right? Like, I mean, you probably, I don't know if you can hear in the background right now, but where my office is, I'm above, there's a little pony area underneath our house, which is where our boiler's kept in storage and stuff. And we've been having issues with our heat.
Hmm? Not where you keep ponies?
Not where you keep ponies, no. They call it a pot because it's a small little door. But it's underneath, because we're built...
That's disappointing.
Yes, it is. It would be awesome if there was a pony in there.
There would be really... I would love to see you on a little pony.
I'd say that. I don't know how the pony would fit into this thing, but... But yeah, so we're having an issue. We live in an old house like you do, right? So it's radiator heat, but it's boiler, right? So we had to get a gas. When we got gas put in, we had a direct hot water tank put in, like on demand hot water put in. So we had like a wall mounted furnace that went in. Well, in recent months, the thermostat we had upstairs wasn't acting right. So we replaced it. I replaced it with a Nest. Turns out the Nest won't work because we have a low voltage thermostat. We had the guys come in who had already serviced the furnace, cause we thought that was part of the problem. I said, okay, put in a Honeywell. So they put in one the other day, because the heat was kicking in and it wouldn't turn off. Like, so we're getting, you know, temperatures in the 80s in our house. And we're like, it's winter. We don't need this. I mean, yes, we want to be warm, but we don't want to, you know, be in Bermuda. So, so basically what's happened is, and this is the whole point about the disconnect, is I'm trying to explain to them what I've been done. The one guy said, you know, oh, well, he installed an S, so that's what happened. I'm like, no. I did what the Nest told me to do, and it was not working beforehand. Now what's happening is that they're having a problem getting our boiler, which has a communication device on it, to talk to the thermostat, which also has a communication device on it. So the two computers are not talking to each other, right? Like, they left yesterday saying, it's all fixed. And literally as they drove away, I heard the exhaust come on the fan downstairs. I'm like, what's going on? Sure enough, the heat's come on. And I'm like, what is going on? And so he's actually had to call Vancouver, like a tech in Vancouver that's worked with this boiler, even though they installed this boiler, these guys themselves, because the disconnect is just there. And I'm seeing more and more of these disconnects, not just in terms of, like a grading system that I can't quite relate to. Because, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what was wrong with A, B, C, D, E, F? Like, what was wrong with that? And same thing with this. Like, all we want our thermostat to do upstairs is tell the boiler, turn on. Oh, wait, it's hit its temperature now. Turn off. Yeah. That's all we want it to do. And we seem to be adding complexity to things that don't need that layer of complexity. And it's baffling.
Well, and I think that that's partly what it comes down to. It comes down to this desire to
I think they call it progress, right?
they call it progress, but but I come back to, what problem does this solve, right? And when you look at the solution, you wonder, what's the problem that's trying to be solved here? For instance, is the problem with your children's grading system one where at fourth grade they don't want to give anyone less than a D or an F, or give someone, a kid, a D or an F because they are afraid that, I'm not sure about this. Maybe there's studies that have shown this, but that if you mark a kid as a D student or an F student at that early of an age, it has an effect on their ability to actually achieve more, to actually do better.
Right.
They get stuck in the, I guess I'm just not good enough sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, I think, hey, all right, if that's the problem you're trying to solve, that's a very, very valid problem to solve. So, I mean, the thing is that there's two really ways to solve that problem. One way, the easy way, the way that they obviously chose was just eliminate D's and F's, and then no one can get a D and F, and everybody's an A or B or C student, right? But does that achieve the same effect? right? You know, does that change what an A means, what a B means, what a C means? And what does that mean for the Cs, the kids who get Cs? What does that mean for the kids who get Bs? You haven't actually solved the problem.
It's also a legacy thing too, right? You know, I mean, what does the D, what means, what does the D represent now? What was representative of that? What about people who are trying to understand it? How can we better educate people about it instead of just saying, here's report cards. What are the, what? This doesn't, because that's what happens, right? We just look at this and go, what? I don't understand it. And they just assume, well, that you should.
Or, you know, the hard way to solve it is improve whatever, you know, the method is that you're using to teach that student. There's something not working. I know this from personal experience, right? A big part of my problem in school was oftentimes that I was bored. It wasn't that I didn't know the material. It wasn't that I was stupid. It wasn't that I, you know, just couldn't get it. It was just that I was, however the teaching was happening just wasn't reaching me at that level. Even to the point where oftentimes I would get bad grades for doing the wrong work.
Right.
In other words, you assigned me a book assignment, and you say, okay, you can pick from this list of books. And I say, you know what? I hate all of those books. All of those books are stupid.
Yep, that's happening. It's happening to my daughter now.
I mean, I'm going to read my own book, and I'll do the book assignment, and you can grade me based on my, you know, based on my report on this book. It, well, you know, I would turn that in. I wouldn't ask anybody. I wouldn't say, is it okay for me to do a different book? I'd just say, no, you're an idiot. You're wanting me to read this piece of crap, which has nothing to do with what, you know, the greatness of American literature or literature in general. I'm going to read this other thing that obviously is better. And, you know, I mean, if I were to go back now and choose again, well, no, I'd still be right. Yeah, well, you get what I'm saying, yep, right?
Totally.
And so what you need is you need a teacher who's going to go, you know what? Okay, I get that. The kid has chosen a book. He's not chosen an easy book. It's not choosing something that, you know, he's chosen a book that, or maybe it's a book I'm not familiar with. I'm going to read the book and see if that's a book that's appropriate, and I'm going to grade him based on that, right? Yep. And the few teachers that I had, and I'll say mainly in English, but especially in social studies, I was just completely bored because I was a huge history buff and a huge history fan, and I could walk in and just take tests and ace them. But I didn't want to do the homework, and I didn't want to have to prove that in the traditional way to anyone, so I didn't do the homework. And that was my problem, you know. And when they would ask me, well, why are you not doing your homework? Because I know this stuff. The point of homework is for you to take these ideas and to learn them, to ingrain them, to get them deeper. I don't need that. You know, and I can prove to you on the test that I know this stuff. So why do I have to do this other work, right?
Yeah, the problem is that, and again, this, I think what happens in these situations is the template's there, but they make it more of a rule rather than a guideline. Do you know what I mean? And I think some teachers, my daughter's teacher right now, is really good at making it more of a guideline than a rule. But there are some out there that go, you know, and honestly, in most cases, I find it's the teachers that are just there to teach, that just to go in, do their thing, and get out. You know,
Which is sad.
Which is sad. But I mean, we see that in every kind of profession too.
Well, and I mean, but, and
it shouldn't happen, but we do.
No, it shouldn't happen, you know, but it's like when I look at kind of corporate culture, for instance, and see this kind of standardization of creativity and results, and like, you know, I just see it as so soul sucking, right? And now you're going to get a lot of email from people who do like Six Sigma and, you know, crazy crap like that. I don't get it. Make any sense to me.
Some people, I mean, if anything, in some cases it creates awareness, and I totally get that. But in in a lot of cases, that kind of stuff is implemented to kind of create measures, you know, to put measures in place. So that
to put measures in place so that managers can have something to benchmark against to make them feel like they are achieving results, so that they can look at one quarter and see the benchmark here and the next quarter and see it at this higher level and improve their worth and existence. Guess what? That doesn't prove anything. That proves that you're able to get people to follow some weird rules. Any monkey can follow rules. If you wanted to hire monkeys, hire monkeys.
It's dogmatic. Yeah. Here's the thing is that I think what happens in these situations, and again, this comes down to there's so many things happening that we want people just, instead of them looking at the right things, just look. Like, you know what I mean? It's they distill it down from, we really, and you see it when managers and with people that are in positions of authority, or even just people that are in, and when I say in authority, they're also in control of their own jobs and their own functions and the way they tackle their tasks and the things that are on their lists or whatever. If they can approach them in a way that makes sense to them, they're looking at it more critically. But in most cases nowadays, we just say, just look at this, like, and get me an answer as quickly as possible because you have 50 million other things that you need to do. And I honestly think that that's probably what's happened as far as, well, look at it. I mean, look at my heater downstairs. Hey, the controller's built into the boiler. That means it'll control your heat. Well, that's all well and good, but the boiler's in this room underneath my house that I would have to go to adjust things. Yeah. What if it breaks? Well, then the thermostat should control it. The thermostat was working fine. Now all of a sudden, and they're not talking with the grades. Look, A, B, C, D, E, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Same difference.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Like, why? And I mean, honestly, if we are putting ourselves in a position to teach our kids and stuff to be able to function in a society that's getting more and more, busy. I'll just use the term "busy" as a blanket term. Do we really want to set them up with the false sense of you're doing well?
Do we want to set them up with a meaningless measurement of what doing well means? Mm-hmm. It is, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, getting back to productivityist and how this all relates. This is the problem with, with priority, right? You know, priority is this thing that's going to be different between you and me. It's going to be different, you know, with circumstances. It's going to be different depending upon what kind of time we have, what kind of time that thing is, needs to get done in, or when it needs to get done by. You know, something that I have to do tomorrow isn't obviously a priority today, but suddenly becomes one tomorrow, right?
Right.
And this is the reason why priority in a traditional kind of task management system doesn't necessarily work, at least not in a very static approach to it.
Right.
Priority is dynamic, right? And this is the reason why so many task systems fail is because it doesn't take this into account. And there is no way for a task management system that we have found yet, and there have been many that have tried, and I have yet to see one that actually works. And some would say, well, GTD kind of does this. No, it kind of, maybe, no. but basically, one that kind of gets to know you, your lifestyle, what you've got going on, the other things on your calendar, this sort of, and helps you define what's important to do right now.
And I don't think anyone, I think no matter what system they use, you have to, the human approach. It's the human.
Right.
I mean, the app is only as good. I mean, the approach is what you need to focus on first, and the app will help you. It's like, the tool won't build the thing on its own. It needs someone to use the tool.
But this is one of the reasons I like pen and paper is because it's a tool that's flexible enough to adapt to anything I want to use. Right.
Did you, by the way, did you order the Apprentice limited editions from Baron Fig?
They were sent to me by my good friends at Baron Fig. Nice. Yeah.
And you got the juggler too, right? The limited
edition. Yes, yes. And I opened it up and I immediately thought, oh my gosh, it's Mike Vardy Green.
So yeah, they arrived yesterday. One of the things I wanted to touch on, because this book has been really kind of hitting the news a lot more lately before we wrap up, because you mentioned priority. And I noticed how you mentioned priority as a singular term as opposed to priorities, which of course did not exist. So you know I'm going to touch on Greg McKeown's essentialism, right? Have you read that book yet?
I have yet to read it. I am sorry.
No, it's
I have failed you.
It's okay.
I have failed this podcast.
You're gonna basically be reading it as you read it, and you're going to be nodding your head. Because it's a lot of the stuff you've talked about, a lot of stuff we've all talked about. It just obviously presented differently. Yeah. But it's one of those things where, and I guess this kind of ties into back to the whole like subjectivity of what resonates and what doesn't, is that all of a sudden this book is the new hotness because like, oh my God, this guy is talking about some stuff, essentialism. It's so, I'm like, you know, Greg, great book. Good job, Greg and McKeown. But a bunch of us have been talking about this for a long time. It's just how the message is conveyed and who connects with it, you know, at a specific time.
Yeah. Well, I think that, what it comes down to is this, all of these things that we talk about, me ranting and raving about putting, about tasks being an essential part of your calendaring, with your now year, stuff, whatever. David Allen with GTD, Greg, essentialism, all of this stuff are helpful suggestions. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yep. They're ideas. They're frameworks, right? They are things that are meant for you to take and for you to ponder and then for you to go off on your own and use the piece of this and a piece of that and then figure out what works for you, right? I'm not going to claim that, putting your tasks on your calendar, works for everybody. Yeah, I try to make the strong argument that people are doing it anyway. They're just not being honest with the fact that they're doing it, but that's neither here nor there. Delude yourself if you want into believing that you're not doing it.
I love how you reinforce the argument again.
That's all, I can't resist. But the bottom line is that that might not work for you. That might not work with the way that you work. You're one of those people who sees, I don't want all of that stuff cluttering my calendar. Or
it might only work with an aspect of your life.
Right. It might work with something, right? Yeah. It may not work with going to the bank, but it might work with doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. For me, it certainly works with taking out the recycling and taking out the trash because – quite frankly, I actually have to do the trash, especially the night before because the garbage folks come so early. I mean, they come at like 6 in the morning.
Yep.
And so if I don't get the trash out at night, I have to get it out on Thursday night, despite the fact that it's picked up on Friday morning.
Whereas I'll put it in my task app listed as something I have to do the day before. Because it's interesting. There's this post that some really, really wise man wrote called Sensible Defaults.
Yes.
I can't think of who it was.
I have no idea. I think that same guy just put out a book called This Could Help.
There you go.
You can get it on Kindle, paperback, and EPUB if you go to patrickroan.com/book. Patrick Roan, that's his name. Patrickroan.com/books. Yes.
I should have
I
should have him back on the podcast soon, I'm sure. But no, these are all sensible defaults. All of these, any of these things that you take, whether you take, the Strike Through System Dash Plus, whether you take, OmniFocus or Todoist, or whether you say I'm going to use Sunrise or Timefold, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you pick like the thing that your brain goes to, it's like, oh, this needs to go here. This needs to go.
Yeah.
So that's what all of these systems are built on, those, like you've professed, sensible defaults that are sensible for you.
And that make the most sense, that you're like, okay, this resonates with me. I'm going to give this a try.
Yep.
Yeah, this just works. Terrific. It works for you. It doesn't work for you. I don't know. Find something else. Come up with your own thing.
There's no shortage of information and philosophical meanderings about this stuff out there either. So.
And it's all right and it's all wrong.
Yep.
I'm just telling you that.
Ooh, it's
all right for somebody and all wrong for someone else.
That's a post right there. It's all right and it's all wrong.
Yeah.
There you go. Patrick, thanks so much again for being on the show. I love chatting with you. We're going to do this again.
This is great.
In fact, as soon as we're done, we're going to schedule another one because this is the kind of stuff that everyone enjoys listening to. So thanks again, buddy.
Well, thank you for having me. I love doing this.
Cheers.
Cheers.